Welcome to Keyside Auto Tech Talk. Today, I'm very delighted to have a special guest, the expert of the e-mobility market, to share his industry insights of how the electric vehicle battery market is managing amidst rising costs, not only in research and development into new battery technology, but also cell manufacturing and assembly for the electric vehicle, or we call it EV. Pradyot Sathe is a research manager with Frost & Sullivan's mobility practice. Pradyot's area of expertise includes powertrain and electric vehicles. We have a special focus on the global electric and hybrid vehicle market and technologies. And Pradyot's been working in this domain for over 12 years. So he's the right person for me to pick his brains on. So hello, Pradyot. Good day to you. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Hello, Louis. Nice to participate in the discussion today. So I look forward to a fruitful discussion.
Without further ado, I'm going to launch into the first question now. Well, we know that the battery is obviously the core to EV's range of performance, but it is also a major cost factor. So just to put things in perspective, how much do EV batteries cost, maybe as a percentage of the entire car? And where do you think prices are headed, since we've been hearing reports of rising costs of battery materials?
Right. So with reference to the cost of battery packs, or rather the development cost of battery, what we have seen in the past is that the costs were high, and that was one of the major factor which was driving up the cost of the vehicle. But what we have been seeing recently, so until 2021, the costs were around $130 to $140 per kilowatt hour. So this price, or this cost we are talking, is of the full battery pack. Mm-hmm. And there is a different factor for the cells, but overall, if we talk about the battery pack and today's prices, looking at the situations that are changing, geographically or rather political or economic factors, right now we can see the average cost of a battery, which is a lithium-ion NMC battery, that would be an average between $130 to $140 per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. So that's the cost. And if you look at the future perspective, of course, like I mentioned, there are various factors that affect the price. Sometimes there is an increase when there is a scarcity of battery materials. So that we can consider that to be a 5 to 10% variable factor, which may drive the cost further up in future if the scarcity of resources continues. But we can say the average that we can see is between $130 to $140 per kilowatt hour.
And in terms of the price drop, maybe over 10 years ago, what would you say, how has that drop been? Could you give us an idea of the trend of reduction?
Yeah, so in terms of the price drop, what we see is, of course, we see a lot of announcements that are coming up from different companies globally when they're setting up gigafactories. There are hundreds of gigawatt hours planned production capacities that we are seeing across. There's Europe, in the Asian region, in North America, we can see a lot of gigafactories that are coming up. So I know at least of about 150 gigafactories that would be established in next 3 to 5 years across these regions. And of course, there is technological breakthroughs that various companies are looking at by looking at various different chemistries. We see that NMC is something that is being widely adopted as a chemistry, but we also can see right now the increasing popularity of LFP batteries. Then there are alternate chemistries that are coming up. We can talk about solid state batteries, lithium sulfur. So there are various other experiments that are ongoing, coming in the form of concepts. So there are already some of the OEMs, European OEMs, who have announced the adoption of solid state battery, or they already have that in concept and being tested. So we can see a lot of chemistries that are upcoming. So that is one factor which would we can refer to that as a breakthrough for the technology in future. Of course, everyone has its own pros and cons, but right now LFP is something that is being considered as the technically and economically qualified chemistry that would be LFP. So for now, we can talk about we can consider LFP, but looking at the future, we see a lot of OEMs focusing on solid state.
Yeah. So with regards to cell chemistry, before we take the next question of gigafactory proliferation, right? Do you think there'll be some major technology disruptor like sodium ion to unseat or dethrone lithium ion? What do you think?
Right. I mean, to answer this, if we look at the disruptor, you know, you give an example of sodium ion or, you know, any other. So at least in the short term, we do not see any major disrupting that would happen in the industry. And that's mainly because the complete ecosystem would have to adopt to that specific technology. And right now, if we look at the way electric vehicle ecosystem is working, already it's trying to synchronize with the existing ecosystem. And if there is new technology or new disruptor, there's some disruption that happens, everything again has to align itself to that. So at least in the short term, we do not see anything of that sort. However, we can expect in the shift in the overall battery chemistry after, you know, 5 to 7 years. But there would be some short-term advancements that would be happening. For example, you know, the structure of the battery. So until now, you know, we could see cell to back becoming the next trend. So in terms of the packaging of the battery, the traditional one that is cell to module to pack. So there would be no modules going forward in some of the advanced batteries, Max. And the cell would be directly, it would be a cell to pack kind of an architecture. Or it would be a cell to body or a cell to chassis, whichever way it is being classified by different OEMs or different battery manufacturers. Right. So these are the kind of breakthroughs that we could see. Then there are other advancements that are happening in the space of the battery management systems. We can see advancements happening there. There would be adoption of silicon materials there, the adoption of advanced semiconductor into the IC chip. So these are all short-term advancements that would be happening on the technology side. But that would be a modification to the existing. So traditional versus advanced flow.
So very interesting insights on that. It's not just so easy to introduce new chemistries because you're talking about all the integration that is required. And so, well, that brings me to the same question that if I bring up hydrogen, you know, which has always been there. I've seen it at some major trade shows. That will not be so commonly adopted across the electric vehicle market.
So if we look at the hydrogen or the fuel cell technology, which is coming out, fuel cell vehicles, if we have to look at from the segment perspective, for passenger cars, it would be a very geography-focused market. And the key reason for that is the establishment of infrastructure, the availability of hydrogen infrastructure in a specific country, and then adoption from the OEMs as well. Now, if we have to clearly talk about passenger cars and fuel cells, we can see a lot of Japanese OEMs, Honda, Toyota, they're all focusing on fuel cell technology. And that, again, you know, the development of infrastructure goes hand in hand. Similarly, if you look at the European region, Germany is the hotspot for fuel cells. Again, there is a lot of testing that is going on in the field for passenger cars. But what we as Frost & Sullivan internally think as is that the adoption of fuel cells within commercial vehicles would be more prominent as compared to passenger cars. I mean, if we have to look at the acceptability in the market, the first acceptability would come from the commercial vehicles. That is what we feel. And later on, it would pass on to the passenger cars. Because if we look at into consideration the global perspective, as a region or, you know, different OEMs coming together, it would be limited to a few countries as of now.
Right, that's interesting. Perhaps it's kind of like an economies of scale when you talk about fleet technology, right? So it's better controlled than you and I having our own cars and deciding different...
Exactly. Of course, you know, both the technologies have it as its advantages, disadvantages, but if you have to advocate for the fuel cell technology, it would mainly be, you know, if there is established infrastructure, you know, talking about availability of hydrogen, whether it's on-site or whether it's the other way around. So these are some of the important things that would have to be considered if we advocate for the fuel cell technology.
Right. Awesome. Thanks for putting it in perspective for us. And that brings me back to the earlier question I had on my mind about the proliferation of gigafactories. You mentioned over 150 gigafactories coming up in the coming years. Now, with new players joining all timers, right? If you look at capital investment, technology, and experience, what's the most critical factor in setting up a successful gigafactory to ride this wave?
Yeah. I think the most critical factor in this case would be the strategic location. So, where the gigafactory is based would be a very important factor because one of the key challenges or that industry challenges that are there when it comes to batteries is the logistical challenge. So transporting the battery from point A to point B is one of the key challenges in a lot of regions, because the different kind of policies that are there, regulations are there, the afterlife of the battery, the disposal of the battery pack, the recycling factor. So there are these three, four factors which have to be considered before selecting a strategic location. So it has to, there has to be favorable policy in the regulations when it comes to battery manufacturing. Although we see a lot of hubs coming up, a lot of countries at state level, city level, supporting the development of gigafactories, so they would give some kind of an incentive or an encouragement to the establishment. But on the other way around, it is very important to see where those battery packs would go, whether they would cater to domestic market or they would look at exporting them. So I think identifying a location is the most critical factor when it comes to gigafactories.
Mm-hmm. How about access to raw materials like lithium? That's always been a real sensitive, isn't it?
So like I mentioned, you know, the strategic location. So this is also one of the factors. You know, identifying the location is most important. So there will have to be a balance that has to be maintained from access to the raw materials versus where do they ship those battery packs to. You know, these two would be the most critical factors. So when we mean strategic location, it caters to both the sites where access to the raw materials and supplying to the whether the domestic market or the international market.
Right. Okay. And talking of this riding the wave, are most of these battery cell manufacturers profitable, or only a handful of them?
We could say a bit of a controversial question, because you know, we don't it's very difficult to know which company is at what stage when it comes to, but what we hear from the industry is not all the organizations are profitable when it comes to battery, because there are a lot of other challenges that are ongoing. So be it to the demand of the procurement of the raw materials, and then you know, supplying it to the markets, then the fluctuation in the sales of the vehicles. So there are a lot of factors, but what we know is there are only a handful of companies which are at a profitable point as of now when it comes to batteries.
In regards to the evolution of batteries to fit into the broader ecosystem, now the e-mobility market is moving towards vehicle to ride. Would that impact the way batteries are designed? What do you think, in that the technology goes into it?
Definitely, it would impact the development of the batteries. It's just not the battery, but what goes the brain of the vehicle, or other we can say the battery management system, which is there, that would play a very critical role here. And along with that, there would be a modification on a lot of areas. So when we talk about vehicle to grid compatible vehicles, it comes with a bi-directional onboard charger, which won't make the vehicle compatible with the grid.
Right.
Until then, we could see unidirectional onboard chargers, which could only have one-way communication with the grid, but with the bi-directional onboard chargers, it would be able to interact with the grid in a much more smarter way because of the advancement of the battery management systems. And of course, you know, the ongoing development of the policies, regulations, in some countries, which is mandated to have establishment of a smart infrastructure. So when you have a smart grid, then there would also be bi-directional vehicles, which would be there. So if we have to talk about our internal findings, we are estimating at least 70% of the vehicles by 2030 would be coming with bi-directional onboard chargers.
That's very fast. That's about 7 years away from now. And that brings me to a consumer kind of question, right? Like, there's some concern that if bi-directional charging, will my battery life be shortened, and will I need, you know, better insurance?
Yeah, so, there would be some kind of an impact on that. As of now, we do not know much. But what we know is that this challenge would be overcome again by the intelligent battery management systems, which would be there, because that would be the one which would monitor the complete life cycle of the battery. So, you know, the state of charge, the state of health, the efficiency of the cells. So all this would be monitored by the battery management system, and that would indicate anything, or it would predict any anything that would be happening with the battery pack. So I think rather than talking about what impact or negative impact it would have on the battery pack, it would be more logical to talk about how the battery management system would work in order to manage the battery efficiently. So this would go hand in hand. Rather than, you know, talking about the impact of the battery, we can see there would be intelligent battery management systems which would monitor the battery and indicate the most efficient way to charge the battery or use the battery.
So that's another specialized market altogether, the BMS market, where the specialists are developing that and emulating that environment to stress test the BMS perhaps. And that leads me to the next question to wrap up, with the regards to the broader market, right? What about electric vehicle supply equipment, or we term it EVSE? That's also a critical part of the infrastructure for both drivers in the V2G ecosystem. Which regions are leading this, in this area, and which regions still have a long way to catch up? So that is like a chicken and egg question that we all learn about.
Yeah, so talking about infrastructure, you know, it is very clear that, now all the markets have started focusing on infrastructure regardless of what the EV sales is, because it's pretty clear that if infrastructure has to be established, whether, you know, the sales is happening currently or not in a specific market. But again, referring to our internal studies and analysis and the reports that I have authored, it is clearly visible, or rather, if we have to give an indication, there are locations. If you look at different ratios, the current ratio is that at one location there is an average of 3 charging points, which is there. So at the one, at a single charging location, it has about 3 charging connectors. So this I'm talking about an average, say in Europe, China, and US, it is between 3 to 5. So one location would cater to either minimum 3 locations by maximum 5 locations. So that's an average that we have. Now, if we have to compare these charging points versus the electric vehicles on road, in China, there are about 8 to 10 charging points. One charging point that is catering to about 8 to 10 electric vehicles. So that's the ratio. So one charging point for 8 to 10 electric vehicles. That changes in the US. So there is one charging point that is catering to about 12 to 14 electric vehicles in the US. In Europe, that average stands between 10 to 11. So, if you look at it, the major markets, the ratio would be somewhere between one charging point catering to minimum of 8 electric vehicles and maximum up to 15 electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And this ratio is calculated considering the number of electric vehicles that are on road in those specific markets and the cumulative installation of charging points across different locations.
These are the more developed markets, right? But what about the rest of the world, of course, ex-China? In the developing markets for electric vehicles, what's the potential? Like maybe, like if you look at the traffic jams in Thailand or in Indonesia, Jakarta, looking at so many vehicles, there's so much potential, right? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in such markets, the penetration of electric vehicles would be important to note. So, you know, we could ideally, if we look at the current situation and if you look at how it will transform, the initial trend or initial wave would be towards the electric two-wheelers, or rather the electric two-wheeler penetration would, that would be the highest in the coming years, predominantly the Asian markets, which would then translate to passenger cars and then heavy commercial vehicles that would be picture. But in this, again, why we see electric two-wheelers is because the kind of infrastructure that has been set up when it comes to battery swapping business model, or whether it's charging. So it's more friendly, or the infrastructure is much more robust towards electric two-wheelers as of now, as compared to passenger goods or heavy vehicles. So that is one of the key factors which we can comfortably say that the high penetration rate would come from electric two-wheelers initially. And towards the end of the decade, we could see the increased penetration percentage for passenger cars and commercial vehicles.
Right. And then maybe just to wrap up this session, with the proliferation of electric vehicles, whether it's two-wheelers or four-wheelers, how ready is our utility system in terms of the electricity grid to take on this transformation? Would you like to leave us with some thoughts or some insights on where this is headed?
Yeah, so in most of the markets, if we look at the announcements that are coming from the government OEMs, I think it has already been discussed in a lot of developing markets that the grids would be ready to take on such electricity loads, because there are various other ways now which are coming up to manage the infrastructure in a smart way and a more efficient way. So there is a lot of development happening on the grid side as well. just not on the OEM side. So I think that is going hand in hand. And at least until now, we haven't another, you know, there is no challenge that we can see upcoming when it comes to the grid management, because now in future, everyone is talking about smart grids, vehicle to grid communication, and smart management of the total ecosystem. So I think that would not be a very big challenge in future, considering the developments that we can see ongoing. Otherwise, there would be a red flag that would be shown if there are any such challenges coming. But at least we don't see such a thing happening in any of these markets as of now.
That's good to know that technology is backing up these developments. Pranjo, would you like to leave us with any final thoughts on what we can look forward to in this transformation to a greener economy?
Yeah, I think, you know, whatever analysis or comments that we are, you know, that when we discuss about different markets, it is, you know, it comes with a flavor that, you know, some regions would be extremely opposite to what the trend, what are the trends that we are discussing. And that's mainly because a lot of economical, political, and local, you know, challenges that would be there. But, you know, what we discussed, that would be a generic overview of this, you know, the overall EV market. But if we talk further about any specific region, country, then there might be, you know, some kind of changes or, you know, different kind of trends that would be there. So, again, you know, the electric vehicle market completely depends on the local scenario or the domestic scenario for each of the countries, because everything is backed by the government support and the participation from domestic OEMs. And of course, you know, acceptability by the customers as well. So this, you know, completely changes the demographics, change for different regions. So it might vary for some of the regions, but we can consider this as the generic overview of the overall EV market.
Right. So overall, it's trending up. So thank you so much. So I think that's the time that we have for today for the session, but I really appreciate your time and your sharing, Pranjo. So once again, thank you so much. Right?
Yeah. Thanks a lot. It was nice talking to you. I hope, you know, the insights are helpful.